we're going to be talking about the most valuable movie memorabilia. And I wanted to open up the phone lines and the text lines to you guys. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. What kind of collectibles do you guys have? Not necessarily movie memorabilia. I'm going to tell you about the most valuable movie memorabilia out there. And some of it is insanely valuable. Like the amount of money that some of this stuff is worth is absolutely crazy. But do you guys have any memorabilia or collectible stuff that you have appraised or maybe not appraised and maybe it's worth something? I don't know if you were digging through the attic and you found some stuff or, you know, there you go. You can call us up and tell us all about it or text us 312-981-7200. So, Dan, do you collect any? Did you ever collect anything? Like when you were younger, do you have a collection of anything?
Comic books when I was a younger man. Right. The wife and I will always buy a Christmas ornament from the places that we visit.
Right.
Yeah, but that would be about it. So.
Well, now, what kind of ornament, where have you gotten ornaments from? Do you have a favorite?
We have a 10 pineapple from our honeymoon that I really liked. That was
Hawaii?
Yeah, that was Hawaii.
Yeah.
And then Tennessee, Buffalo. The pineapple is the most unique one.
Yeah.
It's pretty big and kind of dominates the tree.
Well, you know what? I mean, it's your honeymoon. It should dominate the tree,
yeah.
Don't you think?
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you have any valuable comics or just?
No, it was one of those things where speaking of our predecessor, Steve and Johnny, I know Steve's a guy who's very, good with that type of thing. You know, he reads his book and then he puts it in the cardboard backing and things like that. Right. I was like, that's good. And I just threw it down and didn't, hold on to it. So if I do, it's not in good condition, but I had joined the point at the point where I was like, the people who were collectors knew what they were doing and things like that. So,
right.
It didn't hold value for me. I bought it to read it. It's like that keeping the toys out of
right.
the box type thing.
Yeah. The people who collect the toys and keep it I know a lot of Star Wars toys are worth, there are certain Star Wars toys that are worth a lot of money, but they of course have to be kept in the package and stuff. And I've never really understood that. I guess if it's just simply, to be a collectible and make
right.
some money on
right.
it, that's fine. But I don't know, man. If you're a kid and you got a toy.
Right. It would have to be like that because everybody now knows that to keep it valuable, it's got to be in the package. So
right.
it's kind of like, well, you know what I mean? Like, I'd be interested to find out what the collectible world is for any modern day stuff. I mean, I don't think it could be toys. There's just too mass produced and there's too much,
I would imagine,
science
yeah.
put into it, so to speak.
And also I would wonder how many people buy two things,
sure.
two of the same item. One you can open up and, play with, and the other one you have to store and put away. Now, I don't know what the most, I had heard the most valuable, maybe you can find this out, Dan, the most valuable Star Wars toy, because I think it was a mistake. Obviously, those are also, whenever
right.
you've got a valuable and they make a mistake, that's always one that's really worth more. Like when they screw something up and there's only, there's a small run of it, that's always, worth more. But yeah, I think, if I remember correctly, I think there was the most valuable Star Wars toy, and again, it's got to be in the package, is they screwed up, or maybe it was a character that got cut out of the movie or something. I can't remember, but I think there's a story behind it. Esmeralda, did you ever collect anything when you were younger? Do you have any collections of any kind?
I do not. I'm trying to think if I don't. No, I don't have anything that would be worth anything.
Yeah.
It's worth it to me.
No, I understand. Yeah.
I have a few things that I've collected over the years, but they don't really make any sense. It's just like.
Like what?
So when I worked at the radio station in college. Mm-hmm. We had promo stuff, and we got a Death. Did it even come out? I don't know why I had a Death to Smoochie, not a hat, but the kind that just
a visor.
A visor, yeah, and it had a rhino horn.
Oh God!
And it was like a floppy, yeah, like rhino horn. It's a Death to Smoochie on it.
Mm.
I have a bunch of stuff that bands have signed for me.
For promo stuff,
I have a towel. No, not even promo stuff. Oh. I have a towel that the drummer of Travis, the Scottish band,
yeah, I know Travis,
threw
yeah.
out.
Yeah.
And then I had him sign it after the fact. I have a drumstick from this band called Taking Back Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
And but I don't think I have that signed, so you could never authenticate it.
Right.
If I wanted to sell it.
Right. I don't really, I mean, you know, I don't really collect anything. I used to, you know, collect Schlitz memorabilia,
mm-hmm.
of which I have a lot of.
But you just collect it in the sense that you think it looks cool.
Oh, yeah. No, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And it was never like, I mean, Schlitz memorabilia is not going to be worth anything, you know?
Well, you never know. Old bar stuff.
I keep my pens because I have a lot of pens here at the station. Mm-hmm. And I keep them in a Schlitz mug. That is, I can see it right now, and I don't think that's worth anything. But I used to have a bunch of Schlitz stuff. I still do.
It could be stuff that's much older, mm-hmm. original, older memorable stuff like that.
Yeah,
it could be
yeah.
pretty penny.
It was funny because I started this collection back in the 90s, you know, mm-hmm. and I've since stopped because I don't drink Schlitz anymore.
And but you can still appreciate.
I can still get
like,
the
it's
yeah
a cool.
It's a great logo, and yeah. it's got a lot of history behind it, you know. And but yeah, so I you know my first wife was into antiquing, and would like to go to antique shops,
mm-hmm.
and. So I eventually was like, oh, wait, this is cool because these antique shops have old Schlitz stuff.
Yeah.
And so, like, digging through that old stuff is kind of fun. And we went up to Wisconsin a few times to this place called Johnsburg in Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. It's just outside of Milwaukee. And it's like a bed and breakfast antiquing small place. And we would go up there and stay at a hotel and then, you know, like, spend time up there and she would love to go antiquing, and I would specifically go in there and look for Schlitz stuff. And it being in Wisconsin, right outside of Milwaukee, I found a mm-hmm. lot of stuff.
Yeah. I wish I had an eye for that kind of thing. You know, the people who own those antique shops, they go out to goodness knows where,
yeah.
like people's garage sales and stuff, and find cool stuff. And it's like, I have never been to a garage sale and found anything cool.
I mean, I'm sure you've watched Antique Roadshow.
Yeah.
Oh, that show rules.
My family has nothing. They have nothing.
Have you ever gone through, well, you said you have a hole, right? Have you ever gone?
No, that hole is just, and then my mom is really good about taking care of stuff. So if we did have something of worth,
yeah.
it would be, you know, impeccable.
Yeah.
But we don't. We just don't.
No.
If anything, it's like maybe my old toys,
mm.
maybe an old doll, but then it would be money wise, it wouldn't be that much because I had played with it.
Sure. It wasn't in a package and all that stuff.
And I was known to wreck at least the Barbies.
Yeah.
The Barbies look dreadful.
Well, I mean, you've heard how I played with my toys. I
right,
set G.I. Joe on fire and I'd blow stuff up with firecrackers yeah. and stuff.
I mean, I have that Cabbage Patch. I'm curious if I still keep it.
Mm.
The talking Cabbage Patch. How much that would go for?
Yeah,
some years.
I'm wondering how much. Cause, you know, I just saw a friend of mine, Robin Coffin, mm-hmm. our old friend, who's been on the show many times. Great actress, wonderful woman. She posted on her Facebook page a picture of a bunch of Cabbage Patch dolls that she has.
Yeah,
like a ton of them. And it was kind of creepy looking because it looked like a zombie cat. Like you ever look at a bunch of Cabbage Patch dolls like just in one
yeah,
area?
They don't have eyelids for the most part.
Yeah.
Most of them just have stickers for eyes.
And they're very scary.
So they're just
looking open. Yeah, they look very scary.
Mm-hmm.
The picture creeped me out. And she was like, does anybody know where I can find out how much these things are worth?
Yeah, they're probably not that much
no.
if they're not in a box.
Yeah, also, and those things were so mass-produced because, that craze was insane.
Right, it has to be one that was very rare.
Yeah.
Certain style or whatever. I have a Barbie that my parents bought me way back in the day. It was like a Christmas edition one.
Uh-huh.
And they kept it in the box for the longest time. And I would always try to stick my fingers in the box.
Now, did they keep it because they wanted it to be worth money?
I guess. And because it was a nice one.
Uh-huh.
So they wanted me to not play with it and just keep it as like a thing. But I'm like, but it's a Barbie. I think eventually I was like, please let me take it out. And then,
yeah. It's really funny. I mean, I don't know if I've got, I mean, I have stuff that's autographed by, you know, movie people and directors.
Yeah.
I mean, I have like a ton of John Carpenter stuff that's been autographed.
I mean, I think that stuff, it always goes up in value once they pass.
Yeah.
And depending on what they sign.
Here's the other problem with it, though, Esmeralda,
mm-hmm.
is that a lot, most of it is personalized, which takes the value down.
Yeah.
You know, like most of it says to Nick from, you know, mm-hmm. you know, like that. So that.
Although maybe another Nick.
Yeah.
Would want it.
Yeah.
I'd be like, this is perfect.
Yeah. The other thing is I don't want to give that stuff up. John Carpenter,
yeah,
George Romero.
I don't understand how people can sell their.
Yeah.
And even when I see like antiques and things that have been in the family and furniture and stuff on the antiques roadshow, I'm like, I wouldn't sell that.
Yeah.
It's cool.
That show, though, is really, sometimes it's really funny and sometimes it's heartbreaking. Like somebody's like, yeah, man, I've been told that this is worth $50,000. And the guy goes, $10.
Yeah, parents, family loves to come up with crazy stories about
right.
stuff.
Yeah. Well, we got a break here. We're going to come back and we're going to talk about collectibles. And I have the most valuable movie memorabilia. Esmeralda, when you hear what some of this movie memorabilia is worth, your brain is going to explode.
Is my Death to Smoochie visor?
Yes, it is. It's worth $4,000.
Oh, I'm in the money.
Yeah. Hey, welcome back, everybody. I hope everybody's doing well. I hope everybody has a great weekend. It is Friday morning. Yeah, man, Friday. And Fly Jams Friday is coming up. That's when we celebrate all things R&B and funky and get your requests in. DJ Shagru will be ready to spin from a new location. We had to bring over the turntables and the TARDIS.
Where does he keep the fish? The fish shoes?
The fish shoes are in the TARDIS.
Oh, okay.
He goes in the TARDIS and
right.
miraculously comes out.
Okay, so that was an easy move.
Yeah, yeah. So that's coming along, and get your requests in little later on. 312-981-7200. Straight Out of Context, Nick D Show Spies, You Big Dummy, all coming up as well. And we're also going to talk about the origin of some phrases, where they came from. But right now we're talking about collectibles, and I've got some insanely valuable movie memorabilia that's out there. And we're getting some texts about you guys and your collectibles. And we were wondering, or I was wondering, what like the most expensive Star Wars toy is. And Dan, you looked it up, correct? What do we got there?
So the most expensive one is the double telescoping lightsaber. The Holy Grail for Star Wars collectors came in an awfully small package. It's a piece of plastic no more than an inch in length. In 1978, Kenner produced Darth Vader, Obi-Wan, and Luke figures, each holding a lightsaber. Each character had a hollow arm so the lightsaber could slide in and out, making it look as if the cyber suddenly lights up when it's in use. While 78 versions of this figure had telescoping lights, a few select had a double telescoping saber. Kenner quickly realized the extra piece of plastic was a manufacturing nightmare and kids would end up breaking it, so they switched to the single telescoping version before mass producing. Any of these three characters with a double telescoping feature could fetch $2,000.
Wow. Again, a mistake. Yeah, as we were saying before, man, that's what it is. If there's not a lot of them produced and it's a mistake, that's going to be worth more money. $2,000 for that, for a little piece of plastic. Here's Tom on WGN. Hey, Tom.
Hey, what's up, Nick?
Hey.
Hey, I have some Wizard of Oz dolls. They're about the size of Barbie dolls. They're still in the package. I got five of them.
Uh-huh.
I got Dorothy, Scarecrow, the Witch, the Wizard, and a monkey.
Uh-huh. And do you know how much they're worth?
No, I don't.
Oh, okay.
I got them for gifts. They're the 50th anniversary.
50th anniversary of Wizard of Oz. Okay. Yeah, I don't know how much they're worth, but you should take them on. Maybe you take them on the Village Roadshow. That's the name of a movie studio. Antique Roadshow. So Wizard of Oz dolls. All right. We'll see how much those are worth. I wonder if they're worth anything. It's 630 area code says, I collect everything books. It's great going to a garage sales when the time comes. Today, I bought 30 audiobooks at a library sale. My daughter collects natural specimens of bugs, butterflies, and taxidermy. And my son collects Japanese robot models. Mm. Robert says, I own one of the boats from the movie Father Goose. Cary Grant signed it along with his kid. Wow. Okay. And Mark the Breadman says, my prized possession is a life-size authentic replica of Yoda. It's worth about $1,500 now. Life-size replica of Yoda means it's the size of a puppet.
Is it solid?
I don't know. I don't know. $1,500 though. It's worth $1,500. All right. Here you go. Some of the most famous movie items in history were defined by really great props. Now collector's items and mementos are worth a pretty penny. Most people hang movie posters to honor their favorite films, but the right amount of cash can buy some pretty amazing memorabilia. And here are the most most valuable movie memorabilia. All right, you ready, Esmeralda?
Mm-hmm.
From Forbidden Planet, Robbie the Robot. Robbie the Robot, one of the most iconic and famous robots in history. It's 7 foot tall robot. It's a 7 foot tall robot from the 1956 film for Forbidden Planet, Robbie the Robot, and it sold for $5.3 million.
Wow.
That's like four times the budget of the no, it's even more than that. It's like 10 times the budget of that movie. $5.3 million at Bonhams, New York in November of 2017. In a press release, the auction house revealed that the lot also included the Jeep Robbie drives on Altair 4, the auxiliary control panel, and his original MGM packing crates. The name of the buyer is not disclosed. Who do you think the buyer is, Dan? Somebody rich who likes science fiction?
The person on the 19th floor of this building.
Oh, okay. Okay. I would guess Mark Zuckerberg.
You don't know what that is. That would be really cool, though.
To have a 7 foot robot?
Yeah, to have in your house.
Yeah.
In a game room or something?
Yeah, you'd get a lot of visitors. So that's for sure. Okay, we got a break here because the news is coming up, and then we'll come back with some of the more insanely valuable movie memorabilia and your collectibles as well. Text us or call us at 312-981-7200. All right. Welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline Studio up here on the 18th floor, 303 Wacker. And it's a Friday morning, and so that means we'll do our regular Friday features. They'll be coming up. That will be You Big Dummy. That's where we read news stories of dumb people doing dumb stuff, and then we vote on the biggest dummy. And we got Straight Out of Context. That's when you listen to this radio station 24/7. And whenever anybody says something that you can pull out of context and it sounds dirty, jot down the day, the time, who said it. Send it to nickdshow@gmail.com. And of course, Nick D Show Spies. That's where you listen 24/7. Whenever anybody mentions me or the show in any capacity, you become a spy. We want to know about it. Jot it all down. Send it to nickdshow@gmail.com. And, And Fly Jams Friday also coming up. All right. Right now that we're talking about collectibles, and I have here a look at the most valuable movie memorabilia of all time. We were just talking about the actual Robbie the Robot, 7 foot robot from the Forbidden Planet, which went for $5.3 million. $5.3 million to a non-disclosed buyer who is apparently rich. Here's Jill in Milwaukee on WGN. Hi, Jill.
Hi, Nick. Yeah, I collect the Funko. There's Pops, there are characters maybe 3.5 inches tall, and then the Mystery Minis, which are like 12 to a set and different rarities in there. Any movie you would like, any TV show, music, sports. I wonder if I lost him. Hello?
Hello. No, I'm here. Yeah.
Oh, I thought I lost him. Anyways, yeah, I noticed a few on Svengoolie's set. I think he's got a few.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, they're really fun. And some of them really are worth something now. Some of my, like I have a big Game of Thrones ones, and some of those are vaulted. There's one, Headless Ned, that's worth like $1,000. I don't have him.
Wow.
One, Renly, he's like $500. So, yeah, it's really fun. I'm working on my Rick and Morty Series 2 Mystery Minis. So, yeah, they're really fun. Like, I have music. I have Amy Winehouse. Like, now, I don't collect these, but the Avenger ones are really popular. So, they're calling it kind of like this time's Beanie Babies.
Yeah,
you know?
the Funko stuff. Yeah, I mean those that stuff is huge. I've only got one.
Right.
I've got one, and it's of my future ex-wife Dana DiLorenzo as Kelly from Ash versus Evil Dead. That's the only one. That's the only one that I have.
Oh,
and I'm gonna have Dana sign it when she comes to town for the for Flashback Weekend.
Oh. That's so cool.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, a lot of people flip them and that I just do it for, you know, the love of it.
Sure.
There actually is, and I got to watch it, a movie on Netflix, a documentary, Funko Making Fun, and I guess they got all the famous collectors and all the different people. But, yeah, it's a lot
of
fun.
That's cool. It's a documentary. It's a documentary on Netflix?
Yes.
Oh, cool.
Called Funko Making Fun. Yeah, and I guess they got different collectors and... it's pretty neat.
Cool.
Lot of music ones, too. But, yeah, I hope you get that signed.
I will.
That sounds great.
All right, Jill, thank you.
Right.
Take care.
Have a good night.
Bye. Yeah, it was available. I bought that, Esmeralda, I bought the Kelly Maxwell Funko, what do they call them, figures?
Yes.
I guess?
Yeah.
I saw it at Flashback last year. One of the vendors had it. And I bought it, and then I took a picture of it, and it's in the package, and I sent it to Dana. I emailed it, I texted it to Dana, and I'm like, "Hey, look, I just bought you," and she texted me back and said, "Yeah, I didn't even know they made one of me," and I'm like, "Yeah, they did." So,
V has one that he was so excited about Blade Runner.
Yeah,
he ordered because I guess they would send you whatever they had. And he didn't get the one he wanted.
Did he want?
I think he wanted one of Decker or of whoever Gosling was.
Yeah.
But he got Jared Leto's.
He got Jared Leto.
And he's like, oh.
Oh, man. There you go.
That's not going to make any money at any point in time.
Jared Leto.
So you got a blind Jared Leto.
Right.
Toy.
That's good. Okay, next here. We've already talked about Robbie the Robot, which went for $5.3 million. How about this? The actual Maltese Falcon statuette from the Maltese Falcon. November of 2013, the lead statuette of the Maltese Falcon from the 1941 film of the same name sold for $4 million. Again, at Bonham's New York auction. According to the auction house, it was one of two known cast lead statuettes created for the Maltese Falcon. But the only one confirmed by Warner Brothers to have actually appeared in the film. Again, the buyer's identity was not revealed. That's pretty cool, man, to have the actual Maltese Falcon that was in the movie.
Yeah. I'm curious, who has this stuff? People who worked on the movies, or maybe, you know, someone they know, or did they find it somewhere?
Oh, you mean where did they get it from?
Yeah, I'm always curious when it's movie stuff like that.
Yeah.
Did they work for the movie companies and they just somehow got into it?
Yeah, it's an interesting point. And like, where did the Maltese Falcon come from?
Yeah. Rich people just the people who used to work on the movies?
Probably.
They just took all
maybe
these
it just jumps from person to person to person for years. Like somebody every year it goes up a million, and maybe just for like for 40 years this thing's been bopping around between four people. You know,
probably.
Private collectors.
Yeah, someone. Oh, I see. I was thinking people worked in the movie, and then they would pass, and then someone's like, "Yeah, we got this old statue."
That's probably what it. I mean, that some of that. I'm sure that that's the case for some of the stuff. How about this one? Marilyn Monroe's white dress and 7-year itch.
See, that's like
that's as iconic as it gets.
Yeah.
Do you know how much it's worth?
$3 million.
$5.6 million. Ooh. It's worth more than Robbie the Robot.
He's got like makeup stains or stains.
One of the most famous movies of all time, 7-Year Itch, was made memorable by Marilyn Monroe's iconic white pleated subway dress. Actress Debbie Reynolds sold the dress at Beverly Hills, California auction in 2011 for $5.6 million, which is monumentally more than the $2 million that was expected to fetch. Competition for the famed dress from the 1955 film was intense. As CNN revealed, the bidding went on for 20 minutes until finally it was sold to an unnamed buyer. So Debbie Reynolds had it.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Probably wore it. And like,
yeah, maybe loaned it to her daughter, Carrie Fisher. Go ahead. Go take it for a spin, Carrie. All right. How about Luke Skywalker's lightsaber from Star Wars and The Empire Strikes Back? It's an actual the lightsaber used by Mark Hamill, who played Luke Skywalker in Star Wars A New Hope and Star Wars Empire Strikes Back, was sold to Ripley Entertainment for $450,000 in July of 2017, reported the Orlando Sentinel. In December of 2017, the lightsaber made its public debut at Ripley's Believe It or Not Auditorium, So you get that odd auditorium.
Mm-hmm.
In Hollywood, California, where it was set to be on display until mid-January 2018, according to the press release. The lightsaber will tour in 2018 as part of Ripley's 100th anniversary. So Ripley bought that one. $450,000.
Did you ever go see, I think it was at the Museum of Science and Industry, they had a whole Star Wars exhibit years ago.
No.
I remember, I think I went for school. And they were kind of showing the science of stuff.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then, but they also had a bunch of memorabilia.
You know what they got? You know what they have at Museum of Science and Industry right now, Esmeralda?
Oh, yeah, the Pixar.
The Pixar.
Yeah, they always get the cool stuff. I went to go see a John Henson whole thing at the museum.
You mean Jim Henson?
Yes.
Okay. John Henson, star of Soup,
yeah,
Talk Soup.
That with the star of Talk Soup. They had the backdrop and the TV that they.
No, that's cool. And that, you know, I still have not gone over to the Museum of Broadcast History to the SNL exhibit, which is I can't even believe that it's been like 5 months and I haven't gone. I have to go. I definitely I have to go. Because I, you know, like some, everybody who's gone has told me that I'm going to lose my mind.
Like, right.
There's so much stuff over there, and props and sets and costumes and memorabilia. Yeah, my head will probably explode when I go to the Museum of Broadcast History for that. So, and we got some texts coming in. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. And we'll get to the text and the phone calls. We got more memorabilia, movie memorabilia to talk about. But we're going to take a break here first. We'll take a break and we'll come back. We got more. And we want you to jump in as well. 312-981-7200. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. Ah, yes. Hey, welcome back, everybody. How's everybody doing? It's Friday morning. Fly Jams Friday. We'll be coming up all of our regular Friday features a little bit later on. We're going to talk about the origin of some common phrases, where they came from. We're always wondering about that kind of stuff, where certain words and phrases come from. And we'll talk about that in a little bit, too. Our phone number is 312-981-7200. You can also text us. We are talking now about the most valuable movie memorabilia out there. Also your collectibles. What do you collect? Is it worth anything? And if you're digging through your boxes, and what have you found? Any kind of collectible stuff, 312-981-7200 is the phone number. And here's some texts that were coming in. And 3019 area code says, I collect Wizard of Oz memorabilia with a concentration on the Wicked Witch. Mmm. 630 area code says, when The Dark Knight was filming downtown, they were using the code name Rory's First Kiss, shortened to RFK. I have a small collection of signs that I stole that were pointing to the parking or the film set. Hey, Dan, didn't they film Dark Knight? Am I nuts? Or did they film Dark Knight Rises at the Trib Building?
Parts of the Dark Knight, yeah.
And the original Dark Knight?
The original one.
Okay, because I remember that there were signs up, the same kind of thing. And they filmed other stuff, too, though, because I remember when we were up on the 7th floor, and we didn't move up to the 7th floor until 2011. Something was filmed, and they used, I believe they used one of the rooms upstairs in the 7th floor at the Trib Building as like a conference room or something. And there were signs in the hallway that were taped onto the wall. And I can't remember. And I know that, you know, like stuff like Chicago Fire and
yeah,
that kind of stuff have been filmed in and around that. But there's a guy just stealing all the signs. Well, you know, you can keep them. That's kind of cool, though. You can keep them for yourself. I don't think it's worth anything, right?
Probably not.
No. I mean, Rory's First Kiss. What a clever idea to disguise the fact that you're filming The Dark Knight. Let's call it Rory's First Kiss. And people will go, well, Meg Ryan must be in it. They must be filming a Kate Hudson movie. Here's one. Esmeralda, now we're talking about movie memorabilia, and our latest texter is a man named Brian. So what do you think he's going to, what memorabilia?
Is it a pommel horse?
Oh, look at that. Psychic, Esmeralda. I would love to acquire the stone pommel horse from The Village and the craziest scene from the illustrious movie Gymkata. I would display it in my living room and even try to perform some of Thomas's flares on it.
Stone pommel horse?
Yeah, here's the thing.
Would he have a stone
in one? The movie, though, because in the movie, it's a stone pommel horse. Because in the movie, he's in this village being attacked by people, And, you know, it's like a stone village, you know, like there's some castles around and really small, you know, cobblestone streets. And it just so happens, like, he's running down like a gangway, and there happens to be like a pole suspended between the two buildings so that he could jump on it and, like, you know, and swing around and kick people in the face. It just so happens that there's this thin pole there that he can swing around on. And it just so happens that he's suddenly chalked up. Like when he jumps onto the pommel horse, chalk flies off his hand, but there's no chalk. But anyway, in the middle of this town square, there's a stone thing with these two handles sticking up out of it, just so it looks like a pommel horse, so that he can do tricks. He can do pommel horse tricks.
All right. Well, on IMDb,
yeah,
the filming locations was Yugoslavia in the Adriatic Sea. So I'm assuming. It's probably still there in Yugoslavia.
You gotta go there. Well, I'm assuming they built it for the movie.
I'm assuming Brian's been there.
Brian probably lives there. That's probably where Brian lives. He lives on the set of Gymkhana in Yugoslavia. Right. All right. I wonder how much anything from Gymkhana would go for, you know, at auction.
$5.
Yeah. Bonham's, New York, by the way. Just sold Kurt Thomas's gloves from Gymkhana, $4.3 million.
There was only one bidder, and he kept bidding against himself.
Yeah, and it was Kurt Thomas. And then he went to the bathroom and didn't wash his hands afterwards. Remember that story?
That was pretty spectacular.
Guy peed next to Kurt Thomas. Kurt Thomas walked out without washing his hands. He didn't want to get chalk all over the place. All right, how about this? James Bond's Aston Martin DB5 from Goldfinger and Thunderball. Said to be one of two cars driven by Sean Connery as James Bond in Goldfinger and Thunderball, collector Harry Yagi of Ohio purchased the 1964 Aston Martin DB5 for what was said to be over $4.6 million when including auction fees in October of 2010 at an auction in London. The other car used in the films was reported stolen from a Boca Raton airport hangar in 1997. Wow, somebody stole the Aston Martin from the James Bond movies. I would say, how many, you know, here's a, you know, we were just talking about these cars now. How many, like, insane cars does Jay Leno have? Because, I mean, his collection has got to be worth, you know, like a ridiculous amount of money. Because, I mean, he's got like a million. He's got like a prillion cars. Like, that's his thing. He's got, like, you know, a ton of them. And I wonder if he's got any I wonder if he's got any cars from movies. Like, I would be surprised if he didn't have the Aston Martin.
You know, forgive me. I completely forgot to tell you this, but before your most recent film club screening, Harold had called me, and he doesn't own it, but he had done one of those Jay Leno's garages with the guys who rebuilt the DeLorean from Back to the Future.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, he had a good time in that.
Yeah. Well, you know what was really funny? The first time we screened Back to the Future, because we screened Back to the Future, like, back in 2012 at my film club, but it happened during, we screened it, like, or 2013 or something. We screened it during one of the polar vortex nights. It was in February, and it was like one. And, like, we didn't really have a big house at all. Like, and the people that did come out obviously loved the movie because they braved. It was seriously one of the coldest nights ever. But somebody actually brought a DeLorean and parked it in front of the theater. So it's like 2 below outside, and somebody brought a DeLorean. I can't remember who it was. Somebody brought a DeLorean, parked it in front of the theater, and so that people could see it. And unfortunately, people would go, yeah, that's really nice. I'm going inside. Yeah, that DeLorean's really cool, but, you know, it's heated inside. So, yeah. 630 area code says, I have a Garfield Goose doll in the box. Oh, I bet that's worth something. That's got to be worth something, at least locally, right? Garfield Goose box? I mean, there couldn't have been a ton of those made, right? At least not nationally. Oh, wait, you know, when did GN become a superstation? It wasn't in the 60s and 70s, right? Because when Garfield Goose went off the air, like, in the 70s, or maybe early 80s. So I don't know if it went, you know, it went national at that point. 815 area code says Debbie Reynolds had a ton of Hollywood memorabilia. She was hoping to open up a museum, but eventually couldn't afford to hold it all and auctioned most of it off. Oh, Debbie Reynolds was awesome. Okay. Hey, let's take a break here on WGN. We get the news coming up. We'll wrap up the discussion about memorabilia, and I'll tell you some more of the movie stuff that's worth a ton of money. And if you want to jump in with your collectible stuff, 312-981-7200. News is up next. Yeah, man. Hey, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline Studio, 18 stories above Earth. At 303 Wacker, our new home, wrapping up our very first week of shows here in our new digs and having a great time doing it. And it's Friday morning, and that means all the regular Friday features will begin in just a little bit. Fly Jams Friday, Straight Out of Context, Nick D Show Spies, all coming up. Get your requests for funky music ready to go. 312-981-7200 for talk and text. We're here till 5 a.m. I'm your overnight dude, and our show has been expanded. It's also we're wrapping up our first week of 1 to 5, extra hour. And Dan, you already have an opinion about the extra hour. The show has gotten goofier.
Yes, very much so. 60 more minutes of goofy.
That's right. So 1 to 5, and then Steve Grzanich is here at 5 with the opening bell, and Steve Cochran at 6 with your morning drive. We are talking about collectibles, and I am talking about some of the most expensive movie memorabilia of all time. And some of this stuff is just insane how much it's worth. And we want to hear from you guys about stuff that you have, that you collect. 312-981-7200. 301 area code says, I don't know what it's worth, but when the original Alien came out, Kenner put out a very detailed Alien figure. Given that the movie was rated R, the toy didn't sell very well. I picked one up very cheap at Montgomery Ward after Christmas that year. I think it's become a rare collectible since. Yeah, you don't see a lot of kids' toys, you know, from R-rated movie. Although, no, RoboCop. They had, you know, and remember Robert Cop? That was the the Japanese knockoff was Robert Cop. That's my favorite. I think that's my, because the Japanese knockoff stuff is really funny. Like what it's named and stuff, but I think Robert Cop is the absolute best. It's a little action figure of Robo. It looks like RoboCop, but and it has the logo, but it says Robert. It says Robert Cop. You know, I think we looked these up in the past, Dan. But when David Lynch's version of Dune came out in 1984 or 83 or 84 or whatever it was, 84, they anticipated that it was going to be, you know, like this big sci-fi, you know, because Frank Herbert's books were so popular, and they anticipated that, wow, we should probably make a bunch of toys associated with Dune. And then Dune came out, and it was what it was. It was what it was, and it not a big science fiction tentpole movie, but it was a David Lynch movie. It was a weird, crazy David Lynch movie that basically everybody hated, except for me. I loved it. But I know that they had a line of toys because Sting, there was a Sting action figure from Dune. And I don't know how much it was worth. There was also Kenneth McMillan was in that movie, and he played the flying fat man. And I know that there was an action figure. There was a Kyle MacLachlan action figure. I mean, just going back and going, you know, looking back at Dune, they're trying to sell that as like a science fiction movie. The kids are going to want the toys. Dan, have you seen Dune?
It's funny. It's on one of the cable channels I have, so I've seen like bits and pieces of it. I always seem to catch the end, the close credits, where it's, you know, the actual actors, you know,
yeah,
as opposed to just the list.
Yeah.
So it's
pretty, it's a crazy movie. The fact that it got
Sting wearing pants in this action figure.
No, he shouldn't be. I mean, he wears pants in the movie, but the most famous moment is when he comes out with like a little loincloth thing on.
Mm.
He comes out with a little Speedo thing. But yeah, I mean, he might be wearing. Have you found a Sting? Because like, if you look up Sting Dune action figure, I don't know how much they'd be worth, but I would imagine they didn't sell. I mean, you know, kids would fall asleep during that movie or have nightmares. Esmeralda, have you seen Dune?
I have not. What is it about?
Dune is about this planet where Atreides and his family Atreides, and it's about this power struggle between these families on this planet that has worms that they mine this thing called spice. It's like Dune, meaning that it's a desert like planet that has killer worms that come up and eat people. And David Lynch, and it's based on a really great Frank Herbert novel, who made a series of novels based on it, on that universe. And David Lynch made a really weird David Lynch movie out of it, and Frank Herbert fans hated it.
Isn't that Tremors?
Well, Tremors was after. But yeah, it's the same kind of thing. Giant worms under the sand, but they, you know, and it's an insane movie, and Kyle MacLachlan was the lead. And right there, it's like...
Is it futuristic looking?
It is, yes. Yes. It's a sci-fi movie. And Sting was in it as a bad guy. I'm trying to remember who else was in it. Kenneth MacMillan was in it. Jeez. I mean, some of his regulars were in it. You know, some of the other regulars were in it. And I loved the movie. I thought the movie was great. And I remember I went with my girlfriend. Oh, you know who I went with to see it, Esmeralda? My older McDonald's girlfriend. That's who I saw it with. And she fell asleep. And we saw it at the Water Tower Place theater.
Mm-hmm.
And there were like 8 people in the theater. And I believe, along with her, 5 other people were sleeping during the movie. Because it was 2.5 hours long. It's like 2.5, it's 2.5 hours long. And I think it's great. It's this insane, crazy David Lynch art movie that had no business playing in malls. And everybody thought it was going to be this huge. Dino De Laurentiis' studio almost went under because of it. So it was an interesting story. And I thought it was great. And people hate it. People to this day hate it, but I love it. Does eBay have any Sting action figures?
They do have Sting action figures. He's just wearing his full suit. It is not a loincloth option.
So the full suit.
I will point out that he looks like, this Sting rendering looks like Bobby Flay, just like with Anita hair.
Wait. I'm sorry. What are you saying? You're saying that this... You're saying that this Sting action figure looks like Bobby Flay. This is what you're telling me, that the Sting action figure looks like Bobby Flay.
With need of a haircut. So like if Bobby Flay let it grow out a little bit.
Sting has that, he's got big spiky, his hair is spiked up in the movie. But he looks like Bobby Flay.
Various prices on eBay, but the Sting signed autographed Dune action figure in the box.
Yeah.
Care to wager a guess?
It's signed by Sting.
Signed by Sting.
Still in the box.
Still in the box.
1,000.
Higher.
Really? 1,500.
Higher.
$2,000.
Lower.
1,800.
1,750.
Wow. 1,750 for a man, oh man. For a Sting action figure signed by Sting from Dune. Wow. What, now do they have other Dune action figures that are out there? I'm sure they're, I mean, I'm, who the hell has any? I mean, I don't think they were played with because kids didn't see the movie. Kids were not, you know.
Mock Baron Harkonnen.
Yeah, that's Baron Harkonnen. Harkonnen. That's the Flying Fat Man. What's he going for?
$27 in the box.
That's not bad.
Sad.
Do you think there's a warehouse
warrior
somewhere?
Yeah. Or a dump.
If I'm not, you know what? And I actually think, if I'm not mistaken, that they actually had, because at the end of the movie, in the big climax of the movie, Kyle MacLachlan and his warriors. Oh, Sean Young is in it, I think, if I'm not mistaken. God, if I remember correctly. God, I haven't seen it in such a long time.
Hey, why? Does his eyes being blue mean something?
Yeah, that's what the spice does that to you. Your eyes glow.
I just love that name, Spice.
It's the spice, yeah.
Oh, he's on spice again.
Oh, it's so fantastic. It's just so fantastic.
He's on that paprika.
But they but they actually tame the worms, Dan, at the end, and they ride them. They ride the worms into battle.
Oh man, I need to see that.
This movie's amazing. You know what? Has V seen it?
Probably.
You have to ask V if
he's probably not, because I don't know anymore.
Yeah, I don't know either, because, you know, when you guys didn't see Escape from New York, both of you, I was like, what the hell? But you both saw Escape from L.A. That is insane to me. But anyway, so they tame the worms, Dan.
That is.
And if I'm not mistaken, they had worms where you can put the action figure on top of the worm and have it hold onto the harness that they've tamed the worms on. And they can ride the worms into battle. That was your little playset, your little Mattel playset.
They do have posable worms here, so.
We need to order all of that. I'm telling you, that's what we need to order. We need to just start spending some money on eBay and getting a bunch of Dune stuff here. And let's rekindle the popularity of Dune that never existed. Now, they did, years later, you guys probably know this. No, you probably don't. You probably don't.
Esmeralda, I mean, I'm just so glad we're learning this before our next party. So
I know. Everyone's going to be so enthralled.
Get all your Dune facts ready to go, because that'll... You want to keep a party going. Start talking about Dune. anyway, Sci-Fi did a miniseries, I want to say in 2000 or 2001, that was much more faithful to the books, and people liked that one a lot more. That, like, the Frank Herbert, hardcore Frank Herbert fans, the author, they like the Sci-Fi series, the miniseries, a lot more than what David Lynch did to it. Now, but weird thing is, I went down to Marshall Field's a week before the movie came out. Frank Herbert was in town to sign books, and I happen to be a really big fan of the Dune series. And so I went down to get my book signed, and Frank Herbert made a statement before he signed books. He talked to everybody who was in the room, and he said, I've seen the movie, and I really, really like it. So Frank Herbert liked it, or at least he said he liked it, just to placate the people that were there.
Well, does he get a cut?
Of course he gets a cut.
Well, there you go. Be like, yeah, you guys should all watch the movie 20 times over.
And I've mentioned this to, like, Frank Herbert fans, and I'm like, and they're like, there's no way that Frank Herbert liked what David Lynch did with it. No possible way. But he said he liked it.
What, does the video game have anything to do with it?
I mean, there was a video game. They tried everything, Esmeralda. Seriously. Perhaps the most uncommercial science fiction movie ever made. They had action figures. They had video. They really... I think there was even a Happy Meal tie-in. I'm not kidding. I think they really went full-on sci-fi marketing on a movie that is an insane 2.5-hour... indescribable, insane art movie. And so, all right, we got to take a break. We'll come back, and we're going to talk more about memorabilia and collectibles and stuff like that. And we're going to do the origins of common phrases. We'll do that sometime next week, because I got a lot of more memorabilia here, and people are calling in and texting in, and now we've opened up a whole can of worms. No, oh my God, I can't believe I just said that, and I really didn't mean it. I just said we've opened up an old can of worms with all the Dune talk.
What are they called?
I can't remember
these worms.
They had a name. They did. They had a name, and I can't remember what it was. I haven't seen the movie or read the books in a very, very long time. So, and yeah. All right, we got people. Somebody's calling in, and the topic says more Dune talk.
Yeah, no, someone's going to call in and be like, Nick, I love all of the series of the TV and show and the movie.
They'll correct me on everything I've said wrong. There's no question about it, because my memory is a little bit faded on reading the books. I read the books when I was a teenager, and I hadn't read them before or since. Like, I was probably, you know, 16, 17, 18. When the movie came out, I was 18 when the movie came out. And so, you know. We'll take a break, and we'll come back, and we'll talk about movie memorabilia and collectibles, and of course Dune on your station for all things Dune, WGN. Wow. Welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we are live in the Allstate Skyline studio, and we're on the 18th floor of 303 East Wacker, and yeah. So we're here until 5 a.m. It is Friday, which means all of our Friday features will begin in a little bit. It'll be You Big Dummy, Straight Out of Context, Nick D Show Spies, and then we'll kick into Fly Jams Friday and get your R&B and funky requests in. DJ Shagrew will play them. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. By the way, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, Dan, the worms, I think, were just called sandworms. They were just called sandworms. I don't think they had a technical name. I'm not really sure, but I think they were just called sandworms. And they were on the planet Arrakis. And that's where you get spice. That's where you mine spice.
This all just sounds so ridiculous.
It's fantastic.
Do you think dudes, you know, space dudes looking for a good time, nicknamed it like, oh, let's get some spice on
spice did,
ruckus.
Spice was a drug. You mined it, and it had, like, great, you know, it was a psychedelic drug that it was also had medicinal purposes, too. And it was the war was for spice. Esmeralda, I know that you are going to run out and buy all the Frank Herbert novels after this.
Oh, I'm going to watch the movie.
You got to watch the movie. You and V seriously have to watch that movie. It's insane.
Ugh, spice. The fact that they called it spice.
You say, find out, let me know if V is, because I'm really curious as to whether or not V has seen this. My guess is that he has, knowing, I don't know him obviously as well as you do, but knowing his tendency and his taste and what he's seen, I have a feeling that he's seen Dune. Now, whether he liked it or not, that's a whole nother story, because I'm so in the minority on loving that movie. But here's Scott, who wants to talk a little bit about Dune. Welcome to the Dune fan club, Scott.
Oh man, I love that movie also. but I'm not calling to correct you at all, because my memory of it is about the same as yours.
Yeah.
It's a bunch of weird things that I read the book, I saw the movie, and I too went to the Marshall Fields exhibit.
Oh, you were?
Before the movie opened. And it was one of the more embarrassing moments of my life, because I was a messenger downtown. I wasn't making a lot of money.
Yeah.
And I had my Dune paperback. And Frank Herbert was there sitting at a table, and there was like nobody around him really. And I went up and asked him if he would sign it, and he kind of looked at me and yeah, okay. And he signed it and gave it back to me. But that's the first, that's the only paperback I've ever had.
You know what's hilarious? I brought my paperback too.
We are really in a club.
I had the book. You know, I mean, obviously, what Frank Herbert wants you to do is buy the book at the event. You know, hardcover. Right. Buy the hardcover and have him sign it. I walked up with my, you know, $2.99 paperback, but he didn't. He wasn't angry about it. He did sign it. He did sign it for me. He was kind enough to sign it for me.
Well, he signed mine too.
Yeah. That's
he
funny.
Just gave me. He just kind of gave me a look. Like, you know, like. Really? You want me to sign this one?
Yeah, that's great. All right,
but
Scott.
No, I loved the movie. I thought it was great.
I'm glad you did. All right, Scott. Thanks, man. I wonder what would happen. Thank you, Scott. I wonder what would happen if I showed that movie at my film club. What would we get? I mean, I won't.
You and Scott.
It'll just be me, Scott, and Mike. That would be it. That would be it. I don't even think we would. I can't imagine anybody coming out. But it would be so interesting to see who would come out. Maybe I should just, like, suggest, because I know the guys at the Music Box, maybe I should let them try it and take a chance on it so that I don't have a bad turnout at one of my film clubs. I bet people would show up. Like, I bet you that if they got a 70mm print of Dune at the Music Box, the place would be packed. Listen, they're doing a 70mm screening of Howard the Duck this week, and I guarantee you a ton of people would be there. I'm going to call up the Music Box and demand that they get a 70mm print of Dune and get that showing. And then we'll all go. All of us. It'll be a show field trip. We'll go see Dune in 70mm at the Music Box, and then we'll talk about it for all 4 hours when we get on the air.
Could we just play it back on the air?
Yeah. All right, we have to break, and then we'll come back. We'll finish up this memorabilia stuff, and people are calling in about Dune. I can't. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. The news is coming up after this. Yeah. Hey there. Good morning, everybody. How are you? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. I'm your overnight dude. We're here till 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5. Steve Cochran with your morning drive at 6. It's Friday. Fly Jams Friday. Get your funky requests ready to go. DJ Shagru will play them. 312-981-7200. We got You Big Dummy coming up. Straight out of context. Nick D. Show Spies. Right now, we've been talking about movie memorabilia, collectibles, and, of course, Dune. which during the break, Esmeralda, you discovered that V has, in fact, not seen Dune.
He has not, but he said that he would probably go see the new ones.
The new ones, because they're, I guess Denis Villeneuve, the dude who made Blade Runner and Arrival, Blade Runner 2049 and Arrival, is apparently going to make the Dune movies.
Yeah, they asked him, this was like in March, I guess somebody asked him at some conference thing, and he said that it's going to probably take 2 years to make, but he wants to do two.
He wants to do two of them.
Two films.
Okay, he's the right guy, too. I think he'd be great. It would be a lot different than what David Lynch did with him. That's all I'm saying. Here's Michael on WGN. Hey, Michael.
Hey, Nick.
Hey.
Hey, I saw a concert back in 1983, and it started off with A Flock of Seagulls, and then Ministry.
Wait, now hold on, Mike. Michael, this was at Comiskey Park. I was there.
You were there, and then finally it was Joan Jett, The Fix, and then The Police.
That's right. I was there. Yep. Yeah, it was at Comiskey
Park. He came out with his orange hair.
Yep.
Yeah, he goes, I'm sorry about the hair, because I just got off a movie shoot.
Right.
So you were at the same concert.
I was, yeah. Yep.
Best concert I was ever at.
It was unbelievable. That was the kickoff of the Synchronicity concert, and it was the Fix, Flock of Seagulls, Joan Jett, Ministry, and The Police. And that was when Ministry was a dance band. That was back when they were New Wave.
Yeah. And you remember Joan Jett getting booed off the stage?
Yes, absolutely. She got booed off the stage. Joan Jett got booed off the stage because everybody was very new wavy at that show.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was at that show. Yeah, absolutely.
Right, it was great.
Yeah, he had the Dune hair.
He had the Dune hair, yeah. And he apologized for it. He goes, sorry.
Yeah, that's so great.
That was great.
All right, Michael, thanks, buddy.
Nick.
Take care.
All right, bye.
Yeah, I was at that show, and it was funny, Esmeralda, because, Joan Jett rules. But that was not the right. I mean, that's just a weird bill. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
you've got like the Ministry, Fix, Flock of Seagulls, Joan Jett, and then The Police. And they booed her off the stage. I wasn't booing her because I like Joan Jett. But all the people with weird hair and rat tails, of which I didn't have one yet. I didn't do the rat tail for about a year and a half after that. So. Yeah, so he had his Dune hair. The crazy orange hair that he has in Dune that makes him look like Bobby Flay, evidently. 262 Erico says, the only part of the Dune movie I remember is a slow fight with weird body armor. 773 Erico says, the spice also allowed for intergalactic space travel. That's why it's so important. 630 Erico says, show Dune. I'll reserve two tickets now. Oh, there you go. There you go. 630 area code. Got some Dune fans out there. Show Dune. I'll reserve two seats now.
Okay.
Now, Esmeralda, you were looking on the Music Box website, and you know one of the projectionists there.
Yeah, and that makes sense because he's a pianist as well, or he plays piano.
Yeah.
And he did like a 20-minute thing beforehand or something, playing music.
And they screened Dune.
They screened Dune.
And at the Music Box. And it was part of, because that David Lynch documentary came out last year. And then after they screened the documentary, they did, a bunch of David Lynch movies. They showed a bunch of David Lynch movies. And they did the same thing just recently with Stanley Kubrick, because there was that documentary about the actor who became Stanley Kubrick's assistant and worked with him on all his movies, and they've screened a bunch of Kubrick films after that. So they screened Dune. I bet they had to turn people away.
Yeah, this is in May.
In May, yeah, they had to turn people away.
Oh, May of last year.
Yeah, May of last year. Yeah, because that's when the thing came out, the documentary. All right, Esmeralda, how much do you think that Dorothy's ruby red slippers from Wizard of Oz went for?
Oh man. 5.5 million.
No, now here, let me just say this. There's a story behind this one. It was auctioned at Christie's East in 2000, and it garnered $666,000. Now, that was in 2000. They say now it's worth $3
million. Yeah, I would even think in 2000.
Yeah, you would think more than $660,000, because, I mean, it's ruby red, there's red slippers. How about the Cowardly Lion costume from The Wizard of Oz?
800,000.
3 million. It went for more than the slippers. I wonder if Bert Lahr's sweat was in it.
Ugh, probably. I don't think you can wash that.
Said, Cowardly Lion costume sold for $3 million at Bonhams, New York in November of 2014. Then, of course, the buyer was not listed.
I wonder if it's because you can probably wear that.
Maybe. Yeah, who the hell would wear that, though?
But the slippers, because she had tiny feet.
Mm.
So you couldn't, I mean, you'd have to have very small feet.
Yeah.
But the Cowardly Lion costume, I bet you anyone can get in there.
Sure. James Commissar is the founder of Los Angeles TV Museum. He had the costume and he sold it. And it was made of real lion's fur. Oh, that's nice.
Jeez. Well, maybe that's why it was $3
million. Oh, man. Jeez. All right, Charlie Chaplin's cane from Modern Times. This went lower than I would think. $350,000. Why? How could that not go higher? I mean, that is... The tramp cane used by Charlie Chaplin in 1936 film Modern Times was sold at auction for $350,000 in July of 2013. The name of the buyer wasn't revealed, but no doubt they're thrilled to own one of the movie props used by that iconic actor. How about the actual Chitty Chitty Bang Bang car? $805,000. You probably can't, you would imagine you can't drive it, right? One of the most historic movie props, the only working car from the 60, okay, so they did have a working car from the 68 film Chitty Chitty Bang Bang, sold for $805,000 at auction in May 2011, according to the Hollywood Reporter. The price might sound high, but the unnamed buyer actually got a deal, as the site revealed that the initial presale estimates indicated that the car would go for $1 to $2 million. And then finally, last one, Esmeralda.
Mm-hmm.
How much do you think the this will remind us yesterday of the fantastic clue you gave me for Casablanca yesterday during Celebrity Name Game? How much do you think the Casablanca piano went for?
$7 million.
$3.4 million.
That's not a lot.
Forget movie posters. Someone actually owns the piano that Sam played as time goes by on in Casablanca. The piano sold for $3.4 million during a November 2014 auction at Bonhams, New York. Boy, Bonhams, New York, they handle all the big stuff. The lot description revealed this particular piano had never been sold at auction, but the other piano used in the film was sold for $602,000 at Sotheby's in December 2012. So $3.4 million for the Casablanca piano. So, and I don't know how much your stuff is worth, but I know that we need to get some Dune stuff in here right now. Dune action figures. We need some sandworms.
You should make it the Dune Studio.
That's right. Let's turn this into the Dune Studio.
The Dune Skyline
this is, this,
Studio.
This is Studio D.
Yeah.
And that D is for Dune. We'll get some spice in here. Our eyes will get all blue and glowy. We can ride sandworms around the studio. Studio Dune. There it is.